If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center,
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
So I'm not trying to claim any conspiracy or anything like that, but it just seems, so I'm just supposed to believe that two roughly 70-year-old Asian guys went on mass shooting sprees within 2 days? That just seems really weird, but there's no other explanation. There's no link between them or any reason to think there's anything going on there, but that's pretty weird. I mean, that's not the common mass shooter, 70-year-old Asian dude.
It's a hell of an interesting coincidence, yes.
So I had, you know, Sunday and yesterday.
Yeah. If you haven't heard, the dust had barely settled from the terrible slayings in the L.A. area before South San Francisco, the Half Moon Bay area. All of a sudden, there's, another old Asian guy who wants to kill as many people as possible. Might be a workplace thing. Nobody's 100% sure. They've brought in a detective who speaks Mandarin to talk to the guy because he doesn't really speak English. But anyway, terrible. Oh, and then, you know, there's no time to discuss the school shooting in Iowa.
Oh, right.
At a charter school, a couple of students were killed and a couple other people wounded. In another example of an angry loser decides I need to hurt a bunch of people because that's part of what we do now. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. But you know what else is terrible is the effort to turn this into some sort of ideological reinforcement of the bizarro theories of the left. Trace Gallagher on Fox News last night. Let's just go ahead and roll clip 60, Michael, and we'll go from there. Listen to this.
In the early hours after the shooting, we didn't have a suspect, a motive, even an exact number of victims, but the media, politicians, and many others had no problem describing it as a hate crime. The very dishonest, perpetually wrong Congressman Adam Schiff tweeted, quoting here, a horrific example of needless gun violence with bigotry toward Asian American Pacific Islander individuals as a possible motive. Senator Chuck Schumer followed suit, quoting, we must stand up to bigotry and hate wherever they rear their ugly heads. Wisconsin State Rep. Francesca Hong, the same woman who repeatedly and wrongly called Kyle Rittenhouse a murderer, said, quoting, we are broken as a nation to have mass shooting and white supremacy reign terror.
It's a heck of a thing to say when you don't know the facts yet.
Well, yes, I would say if you say anything not knowing the facts, that's irresponsible.
True.
To cause racial hatred would be wildly immoral and irresponsible. And what's truly crazy about it, I mean, it's crazy enough, but, you know, in like 4 hours or 6 hours, you're going to know a lot more, but they couldn't wait. Speaking of knowing more, there is more.
Even the LA Times decided it was better to write than wait, saying the shooting, quote, raises fears of anti-Asian hate. Then came the Los Angeles County Sheriff with some factual information.
The suspect has been identified as Hu Can Tran. He is a 72-year-old male Asian.
So, yeah, having gotten their comeuppance and found out that their race baiting was utterly without basis, what do they do? Well, of course, they apologize, right, Trace?
Now, there was a time when politicians and media outlets would take down their false tweets and headlines, but why apologize when you can pivot? As prolific tweeter Dr. Amy Tan said, quoting, misogyny and internalized racism are part of white supremacy. People don't have to be white to uphold white supremacy. And far-left media watchdog Media Matters properly explained what really happened, quoting, right-wing media are exploiting the ethnicity of the shooter. So reporting the fact that he was a 72-year-old Asian male is exploitations.
I don't even know what to do with that.
I know. It almost needs no further comment.
So, you know, when you had Larry Elder running for governor in California as a black guy, he was the black face of white supremacy.
Yes.
If you've got an Asian guy shooting up a bunch of other Asians, that's somehow white supremacy.
Yeah, he internalized white supremacy and killed his fellow Asians because the white people had poisoned his mind. And misogyny, too, since a number of the victims were women. Think how handy that is, though. I mean, it's like having a Swiss, an ideological Swiss army knife. No matter what evil happens, is perpetrated, blame it on white supremacy. If one black guy shoots another black guy, that's white supremacy.
God dang it.
If an ancient Asian immigrant who speaks no English slaughters a bunch of coworkers, that's white supremacy. If a pitcher puts his saliva on a baseball and gets busted for it, that's white supremacy. If the bananas are overripe on your kitchen counter, that's white supremacy. If your dog has fleas, more white supremacy.
I'm doubting that either one of these elderly Asian gentlemen watched a lot of Fox News or read a lot of articles in the National Review or any of the things that would be blamed for sowing the seeds of this hatred.
No, indeed. You know, it's absolutely worth reading James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose's fabulous book, Cynical Theories. I'm going to reread the first several chapters because I think it's so important. I don't remember, Jack, a number of years ago, you brought the piece of wisdom to us. Read fewer books, reread more books.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The idea being you don't absorb nearly enough the first time you read something, or
yeah.
Well, and if it's good, it's worth reviewing.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to reread a chunk of that book. But one of the best parts of it is that they show you the origin of this critical theory stuff, and it's queer theory, gender theory, critical race theory, all of it, and it's almost a mental exercise where smart people look at perfectly reasonable things, and they talk and they twist words and meanings until they find fault with it and can dismantle it. They say, that's problematic. And then they launch into a long bunch of pseudo-intellectual, I'm a smart French guy bullcrap until they appear to have won the argument. But any reasonable person would just recognize it as bullcrap. Well, unfortunately, between the Marxists of the world who have adopted this stuff, because the workers of the world stuff didn't work. Because the workers thought, yeah, I'm getting ahead here. I think I'm going to get promoted. My family's pretty happy. So the workers of the world never united. And so the Marxists decided if we can't get it together based on class struggle, we'll get it together based on race struggle. And wait a minute. If we're doing race, how about gay versus straight? How about transgender versus, not transgender? We'll just pit people against each other on every basis and get our Marxist utopia going that way. But when you recognize the origins of how this stuff got started, you recognize how phony it is every time you see it. Don't be intimidated by this crap. It is utterly intellectually and morally insupportable. It's a steaming pile of dung.
You
fecal matter.
Thank you, Johnny Depp.
So that's all true, and it's just horrible that people in positions of influence are willing to jump to white supremacy conclusions when they don't have any facts and then won't even back off those when it turns out to not be a white guy.
Right.
It would be horrifying if it was a white guy and you claim that's evidence of white supremacy. But anyway, getting away from that.
Well, you could, by their arguments, make a pretty solid argument that old Asian men are dangerous and should be, I don't know, controlled in some manner or retaught or brought to re-education camps or something by the logic of the left, which I just explained is a pile of horse crap.
So it seems like we ought to tip our cap at least briefly to having had two mass shootings in 2 days in the state we're broadcasting from. What do we do about this situation? What can be done? Is there anything? There's got to be something that can be done. The schools, the workplaces, the dance halls now, just what can be done?
A society-wide effort to teach coping skills that don't include violence.
God, I
don't go to violence. But we, where? At the churches that fewer people are going to than ever? At the civic organizations that fewer people than ever are joining? At the ice cream social, at the potluck supper that nobody does anymore. Tweet about it, I guess. Oy, that depressed me.
So, do you think that would make a difference? Do you think the people? Because I don't know, but we'll find out about these two gentlemen. I would imagine in the coming days how mentally ill they were or weren't. Mm-hmm. The first guy from the dance hall who killed 11, or it's 12 now.
Wow.
I think.
Wow.
He was said to be like really struggling in recent weeks mentally. So I don't know what his mental situation was. Are you gonna reach crazy people by saying coping skills? Get a stress ball. Have a friend to talk to. Maybe have a dartboard with a picture of your enemy on it. I mean, I'm being flip, obviously, but is that gonna work on crazy people?
I freely admit I can't think of anything that I am even half certain will work.
Right. I know. That's what's so...
How do you deal with crazy? Including like anger, isolation, and despair to the point that the person's no longer rational. I don't know.
Go into a closed room and exhibit a primal scream.
Sure.
I don't know. Jeez.
I mean, it's rough, man. It's depressing. I apologize for depressing everybody.
Can it get worse? Is that a thing? Does it happen more often in more places? Holy crap. Excuse me.
Got a great email.
Coronavirus!
On.
Yeah, you're right.
Probably so, Dr. Cardi.
Probably have one of the variants. Probably why I should have gotten that 8th booster.
Oh, two things coming up. Next segment. Two things, each one of which is well worth staying tuned for. Number one, Joe Biden's not even close to the most accomplished one-term president. Alert listener Ben in Portland has alerted us to who is, and I don't think there's any disputing it. This is the nation's greatest one-term president. Secondly, a man of the cloth died and went to hell before he was revived. He has described the music they play in hell. The Satan's playlist will surprise you.
Wow.
Yes.
What is on Satan's iPod on shuffle? We've got that
exactly.
Coming up.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am, like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The Oscar nominations will be announced. And, yeah. And apparently, Top Gun Maverick is expected to be nominated for Best Picture, marking the first time in a decade people have said, oh my God, I've seen one.
Yeah, there's certain truth to that. Of course, now they nominate like 20 movies for Best Picture, which I hate.
It's 10.
We'll run through just the highlights of the nominations next segment, so you'll know what at least the critic world thinks is the best stuff out there.
Couple of things. Number one, this note from Ben in Portland. I hate when people say the most blank ever. It's usually in short memory. The most accomplished one-term president is not Joe Biden, as somebody. That's the spin that Democrats are trying to put on his presidency, so he'll go away.
That was Jonathan Alter in the opinion piece in the New York Times over the weekend, and I think he was trying to flatter the guy out the door. You're the most accomplished one-term president of all time. Now be the bridge to the next generation.
Ben in Portland points out the most accomplished one-term president is without question James K. Polk. He ran once, doubled the size of the country, paved the way for Texas, California, and Oregon statehood, fought wars, went home. Biden, he spent money. Good job, Joe. Mm. That's I was just reading about James K. Polk. Yeah, he's as responsible for as anybody from, you know, Jefferson on for expanding the country to a coast-to-coast country.
Well, I remember when we lived in North Carolina, because that's where his childhood home is. It was the least visited presidential home in America. So
that's right.
He's not getting the props he deserves.
He was an earnest, studious, serious man, which made him a bad politician.
Right.
More importantly, perhaps, is your souls being condemned to eternal damnation. So this priest, he lives in Michigan.
He walks into a bar.
No. He stayed out of the bars. He claims to have visited hell after suffering a heart attack and said the experience changed his life forever.
I wouldn't wish it
on my own worst enemy, he said.
He died and went to hell. As a priest.
Yeah, and he was somewhat surprised himself. He's been posting videos about this, I guess. I was there, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I don't care what he did to me. No one deserves that. He described the moment when he was launched to the center of the earth, where he says hell is. My spirit left my physical body, and I thought I was on my way up to heaven. I thought I did so much good during my life and that I helped so many people, but even so, I went down to hell. I entered the very center of the earth. I saw things there that were indescribable. Brings up so many feelings when I talk about it. It's very difficult. He's been a priest for 7 years, describes some of the things he witnessed when he visited hell, including a man walking on all fours like a dog and getting burned from head to toe.
Oh, that's rough.
His eyes were bulging, and worse than that, he was wearing chains on his neck. He was like a hellhound. There was a demon holding the chains around his neck as he was being burned. He added that, like telepathically, I knew that the demon was sent in this man's life to ride him from his childhood to death. Johnson, the priest, explained that the demon knows if he succeeds in making people not serve God and do bad things, he will overpower them in hell where they will be his slaves. He continued, adding that there is a section of hell where music is played. Probably the elevators. Or the convenience stores. He said he heard songs there like Rihanna's Umbrella and Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
That is hell.
Sounds nice, right? No. He said it's not the original artists who sing the songs, but groups of demons that use the words to torture us.
Oh, bad cover bands is hell.
He added that, quote, every word of every song was made to torture you for the fact that you didn't worship God through music while you were on earth. I was angry with God because I did so much good in my life and ended up in hell. I rose up out of hell and returned to earth, and God spoke to me. He said, you were secretly angry with people who harmed you. You hoped I would punish them. These are not your people. These are my people. I want you to just focus on the task I give you. Even though I did good, the thing I had in my heart was lack of forgiveness for the people who wronged me. A man who cannot forgive is a man who forgot that he was forgiven. That is my experience from hell. It is a completely real place. Now, putting inside the unnecessary shots at Rihanna and Bobby McFerrin, the spiritual message there at the end, I think, is pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Any man who will not forgive has forgotten that he was forgiven.
I expected to be some sort of soft rock, light jazz, some sort of thing, that the music was in hell.
Or AC/DC, something obvious.
Oh, something like that.
Yeah. Highway to, come on, do the math.
Yeah, there you go.
Hell's Bells. It's a good point. That's another good one.
If you miss an hour, get the podcast.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
A big morning for everything, everywhere, all at once.
What's happening?
The multiverse movie scoring a leading 11 nominations, including 4 acting nods, directing, and the big one, Best Picture, where it's up against 9 other films. Netflix's All Quiet on the Western Front, the only streaming Best Picture nominee, and The Banshees of Inisherin also with 9 nods.
What did you come here for?
The rest of the Best Picture category includes blockbusters Top Gun Maverick, Avatar The Way of Water, and Elvis, Tar, Women Talking, Triangle of Sadness, and Steven Spielberg's The Fabelmans.
There you go. There are your Best Picture nominations you just heard there. I've actually seen 2 of the 10 this year, which is the most I've seen in decades, because I saw All Quiet on the Western Front also, which is just freaking unbelievable on Netflix. It is not a comedy.
No. No, indeed.
And pretty fantastic war movie, though, and that is up for Best Picture. So the most nominated movie is The Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Let me read what it is described as, because I can't describe it on my own. Usually you see a movie, you could walk out of the theater and tell people what you just saw. Not the case with this movie.
I'd rather see The Triangle of Sadness, which I believe is the isosceles triangle. Is that right? I don't know.
I think the obtuse triangle is the saddest of triangles. But I could be wrong. So Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, like I said, I watched it at home, but if I had walked out of a theater and somebody said, so what was the movie about? I'd have said, oh, well, it's a metaphor.
I heard there's a woman struggling to connect with her daughter.
Was there? it says here, I'm reading this off the...
Quoting from this.
When an interdimensional rupture unravels reality...
I hate when that happens.
And, I know. Trite. An unlikely hero must channel her newfound powers to fight bizarre and bewildering dangers from the multiverses as the fate of the world hangs in the balance.
Damn.
I'm not sure I quite caught that the fate of the world hung in the balance. I kind of got the multiverse thing.
You missed that. You missed the fate of the universe hanging in the balance?
And then I went to this. What is the point of everything everywhere all at once, it says here. Though never expressly stated, everything everywhere all at once suggests that what makes life meaningful is a recognition that because there is no inherent meaning, all things and moments are equally meaningful. All right.
I don't think that's true.
Can't you just have a movie about a guy who befriends a bear and they join the circus? Or, you know,
wait a minute. Now you're on to something.
Something that's very clear to understand. Yeah, he became friends with the bear and they joined the circus and things turned out great.
Or a guy befriends an ape and they drive around. Whatever. Just have a guy befriending an animal.
Or something. So anyway... because there is no inherent meaning in life, all things and moments are equally meaningful. Okay. I couldn't have for $1 million taken that away from the film, but anyway, it's intriguing. I will say this as the most nominated movie this year. You watch it and you're definitely thinking this is something. This is unique. This is not like everything else. I will remember this. So it's got that going for it.
Boy, you got my attention, though, with that, because there's no inherent meaning. So like, the moment where your sweetheart says, yes, I'll marry you, is no more meaningful than the moment where you realize you left your car keys back in the kitchen, so you got to walk all the way back to the kitchen to get them. That has every bit as much meaning if you just think about it.
Perfectly good example right there, and it's hard for me to agree that would be the case. You know what I'm saying?
Well, forgetting your car keys is just a reminder that life is that what lies ahead of us is often what's been left behind us in the kitchen. I could give myself a migraine trying to do this. I'm not sure I buy it.
Right. As I'm looking for, as I was last night, I had like 3 unmatched socks, and I'm trying to figure out how in the freaking world did they go from the dirty clothes pile? I put them in the washer. I put them in the dryer. Where are they? I mean, I can't keep buying more socks. I've got a pile. I put a pile up on the shelf of single socks, and the pile is now, there must be 50 socks in there. Where does the other sock go? So that's as meaningful as the birth of my children or any of those other things. Okay.
You know, all right. Here's where I really get like I'm stoned on you. Maybe the point of the art is it tries to convince you of that premise, and you walk out of the movie thinking about it like we are right now and realizing, wait a minute, there are moments in life that are incredibly important and precious, and I need to be present for them. So the art expressed the opposite of what the artist believed for the purpose of getting you to wake up to what you're missing.
Maybe. I don't know.
Or not.
You watch it and tell me. So a couple of interesting things about the Oscars. Avatar and particularly Top Gun Maverick, both nominated for Best Picture. Oftentimes your big blockbuster pleases the crowd movies don't get nominated for Best Picture. The fact that Top Gun did is something. Tom Cruise did not get nominated in the actor category, though. Snubbed, it says. So there you go. There's a movie called Women Talking that got nominated. I ain't going to watch that. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah,
Joe mentioned that in real life.
The Triangle of Sadness. Tar is about a sticky goo. How entertaining could that be?
Well, it's useful on roadways, but I don't want to watch the movie. Yeah.
The Elvis movie did get nominated. People seem to love that. I'm not going to see Avatar with a gun to my head. So.
And I've still never heard anybody reference it in real life.
I know, which is interesting.
Either the original or this one.
How can it make that much money and nobody ever quotes a line from it or anything? It's just like an Avatar when, nope, nobody ever says
that. As we learned from Avatar, blank. Nope, never. Not even once. And yet this sequel's enormously fabulous again. Mm-hmm. Or fabulously popular. So a quick word from our friends at MyPillow. Yes, they have the pillows. Of course they do. But they have a wide array of products, all focused on enhancing sleep. One of the standout products, no doubt, their Giza Dreams sheets.
Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has made it his passion to give you a great night's sleep. And these Giza Dream sheets do that. They're made from the world's best cotton Giza. Ultra soft, breathable, extremely durable. And right now, the Giza Dream sheets are at the lowest price ever. Coming in as low as $29.98 with the promo code Getty. $29.98. You can afford that.
They got your multiple colors. They got your different styles. They got all your sizes. Now's the time to upgrade your bedding and enhance your sleep. You're going to lie down at night and say, oh my God, this feels like the most expensive hotel we've ever dreamed of staying in. At your own home. Remember, MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty. 10-year warranty, wow. And a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com. Click on the Radio Listener Special Square to check out this sale on the Giza Dreams Sheets. When you click on the square, you'll also find deals on other MyPillow products, only around for a short time. Again, click on the Radio Listener's Special Square and remember the code Getty, G-E-T-T-Y, at MyPillow.com. That's MyPillow.com, and the code is Getty.
A gunman is at large after shooting and killing three people at a convenience store in Yakima, Washington. Now, that
could
be...
Holy cats.
I don't know anything about that. That could be gang-related and not like this other stuff. Or it could
robbery.
Be,
sure.
Robbery. Or it could be like these other mass shootings of the last couple of days. What do we even do with this information? I came across this, which I think is interesting. We think we got homicidal violence. Latin America, holy crap. They've experienced 2.5 million murders since 2000 in this new report that is out today. Let me put some of those numbers in perspective. Latin America has suffered more than 2.5 million murders, and they are 33% of the world's homicides with only 8% of the population. So a third of the world's homicides with 8% of the world's population. One quarter of all global homicides are concentrated in four countries: Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, and Venezuela.
Wow, and you didn't even get into El Salvador, which famously has tremendous gang violence.
Right? Isn't that an amazing stat? A quarter of all global homicides in Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, and Venezuela. That's rough.
Yeah, that's insane.
And they
life is cheap there.
And they all have presidential elections coming up, in which security is a dominant theme, but let's see.
You know, speaking of El Salvador, and I'm not an expert on this story by any means, but I was just reading that the young president there, he was fed up with all the gang violence and the mayhem in the streets. And so they announced a new program of law enforcement, and they arrested 2% of the population.
Wow.
And the jails are just bursting, but the murder rate has plunged.
Wow. You'd have a lot of public approval for that.
You know what, though? He needs to talk to, like, the leadership of Portland and Chicago and Philadelphia. He's got to talk to George Gascon, who will tell him, you cannot prosecute your way out of the income inequality you've seen.
Miss Piggy.
And explain to him how he needs to go soft on crime to end crime. That foolish, foolish president.
You know, we've discussed several times this morning, what do you do about this mass shooting situation? The gang murders, the, you know, crime murders are actually an easier, more easily solved problem than this. When New York had their crazy high murder rate, you know, you got more cops on the street, you locked more people up longer, all that sort of stuff, and you brought the crime rate way down. Or gangs, you know, you start, you know, go after the gangs, bring. But what do you do with just a culture of when I'm mad, I'm going to, excuse me, when I'm mad, I'm going to go to my school or my work or my church or my dance hall and shoot a bunch of people? What do you do with that?
I don't even know. I mean, because you see from, you know, bullied 16-year-olds to sociopathic 18-year-olds to angry middle-aged dudes to angry ancient Chinese immigrants to, you know, the variety of people. So where do you reach, I don't know, everybody?
Unlike, I'm just thinking, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. You tell me. Unlike a lot of the crime that we're hearing about where it's just sickening when you find out this person has been arrested a gazillion times and we keep letting him go. Most of our mass shooters do not have a history, do they?
No, not most of them.
So that
a history of unstable behavior, maybe lashing out, that sort of thing. But no, I know what you're asking. And no, not really. We've talked about this at length through the years, and I don't want to belabor the point, but the way that the media covers this stuff is still terrible. And it seems, I don't know, it seems weird, and I know this, but we've got to stop acting as a society like we're devastated and we have realized the depth of your anger and you've really made a mark upon the scene and we're going to cover this all day. I've noticed the New York Times, for instance, has said we will not be exploitive about mass shootings. We are not going to use them to enhance clicks. I think they've recognized that the people who do the killing, in a lot of cases, now this dance hall lunatic in the L.A. area, or the angry nursery worker in Northern California, I don't think they're this sort of thing, but we've got to deny the mass shooter the ability to make a giant splash.
Yeah,
so what do we do? Downplay it? Ignore it? I don't know.
Well, I feel like we, just like personally you and I, have been talking less about these in recent months, as there have been quite a few, and we haven't even mentioned a whole bunch of them on the air. These we're talking about more, I guess, because they're right in our own backyard. But how much of the what gets into the crazy person's head is people are going to talk about me. I'm getting attention. I'm making a mark on the world. How much of it is I'm going to make a mark? I'm going to leave a mark of some sort. And if you didn't feel like you're going to leave a mark, it's just not that appealing.
So do you have a whole of society effort to say a cowardly, angry loser shot a bunch of people today? We will give him no time or attention. Moving on to sports.
Yeah. That's got to be a lot of the enjoyment, thrill, satisfaction. Those are all the wrong words, but whatever you're getting out of it. Man, if you don't leave a mark of any kind, people are like, ho-hum, whatever, dude.
Right.
Then maybe you just kill yourself, which is definitely a better alternative.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Most of these people want to die, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Anyway, if you got any thoughts, you can always join us on the text line. 415-295-KFTC.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The trouble began last week when police tried to clear 25 campsites for members of a group called Defend the Forest, who oppose construction of a police training center, which opponents call Cop City. Law enforcement officials say a Georgia state trooper was shot and wounded during the operation by a 26-year-old activist who was killed when police returned fire. The protesters are demanding an investigation into the shooting.
Peaceful protest is not domestic terrorism. This is a chilling effect on the peaceful right of assembly.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
What's going on there?
Boy, you're stupid. Well, that's how the Atlanta trouble got started, as Steve Harrigan reported, and then the activist had called for a night of violence on Friday night, and sure enough, they got it. It's being underreported, of course, although when it is reported, it's kind of funny. All the major networks are saying the peaceful protests later turned violent. Okay, all right, so it started peaceful. Well, unless like the first two guys got into a fist fight with each other, then every protest starts peacefully before it gets violent. I haven't heard any of the networks describe January 6th as the protest, which for many hours was peaceful, at the last moment became violent. Nobody's gone ahead and said that. I wonder why.
Well, what were they calling it? They called for a night of mayhem or a night of
rage or violence or I can't remember, something like that. Play 51, Michael. Oh, I'm sorry, 50 rather.
What started out as a peaceful demonstration to mark the death of an activist last week turned violent in downtown Atlanta. Rioters in hoodies and ski masks set a police car on fire and used hammers and rocks to smash building windows. No injuries were reported. Six were arrested. Police say the six were intent on violence, that their actions have nothing to do with freedom of speech.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist or an attorney to tell you that breaking windows and setting fire is not protest. That is terrorism. And that they will be charged accordingly, and they will find that this police department and the partnership is equally committed to stop that activity.
Well, when the policeman was shot, so it was the actual person that shot the policeman that ended up being killed?
Yeah.
Is there anybody disputing whether or not that was justified?
Well, I suppose your activist lunatics might be.
They claiming he was unarmed or had given himself up or no?
No, I haven't heard any specifics about that. Honestly, nobody.
So are they not supposed to apprehend the guy or let him get away?
Well,
or?
They were occupying this forest area where they're going to build a police training center, which the protesters are calling Cop City. And I guess they thought the righteous protester had the right to defend the forest with deadly force. That wow. The evil cops were just invading the forest to build their cop city, I guess, from their twisted point of view. But so they arrested a handful of people, all but one of whom were from out of state. And, you know, I'm going to contradict myself because Steve Harrigan was pointing out that it began as a peaceful protest, maybe misguided, maybe stupid, maybe even wrong. But they're banging drums and yelling, what do we want? Something or other. When do we want it? Eventually, as protesters will. But then it turned violent later, and that's because of the presence of professional agitators, your Antifa types. They charged six people, only one of whom I think, Tennessee, Washington, Nevada. There's one person was from nearby in Georgia, but they charged each with four misdemeanors and four felonies. The misdemeanor charges included rioting and other things. Rioting is a misdemeanor? Felony charges included second-degree criminal damage, first-degree arson, interference with government property, and domestic terrorism. So rioting is a misdemeanor, but interference with government property is a felony. Anyway, there are a bunch of white, and I hate to bring race into anything, but it's a bunch of Trustafarians. One's the son of a surgeon, and it's a bunch of Soch degree holding Trustafarians who've decided they're brave revolutionaries and are going to smash up Starbucks to prove what, you know, Che Guevara's they all are. But the people in Atlanta and the leadership in Atlanta, be they black, white, or whatever, got no time for this nonsense. And they arrested people and they stuck them in jail. My message to those who seek to continue this kind of criminal behavior, said the mayor, is we will find you, we will arrest you, and you will be held accountable. No nonsense here in Hotlanta.
We do 4 hours of this show. If you miss an hour, you can grab the podcast, Armstrong and Getty On Demand.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.